reading. If you ask me what's the key, it's reading, not necessarily books. I even put on subtitles when I'm watching movies because I just want to see what's written. And then, of course, I critique the subtitles and say whether they're right or wrong. I'm thrilled to watch, say, a movie in Arabic, but watch the subtitles in French. I do things like that. Reading good material, trustworthy material of any topic you want.
Hello, Deborah. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Yes, thanks for having me, Marty. It's a pleasure to be here.
And good to have you here. And for anybody listening, for anybody that is not yet familiar with who you are and what you do, could you introduce yourself to us?
Sure. My name is Deborah Lockhart, and I'm the owner of the language shop. I founded the language shop just over 16 years ago. And I used to be a translator before freelancing, and then I decided to go full time. And so I've been at it for 16, going 17 years now.
Oh, very long time, very long time. And how did your journey with languages start? How did you get into languages and translating?
Well, from early childhood, I was very inquisitive. I always excelled in English, reading, writing, spelling, grammar, punctuation, that sort of thing. And I was fascinated with Spanish from very early, even before I started attending secondary school. Then, when I got to secondary school, I started Spanish and I excelled at it. So, by the time I hit fourth form, which would be 10th grade, it was suggested that I take a rush course in French. After 2 years, I took the General Cambridge GCE exams and got distinctions in English, French, and Spanish. So that's how it started for me. I then went on to university and studied languages. It's interesting, though, that at university I didn't find the study of linguistics, which is, the theoretical aspect of it, very interesting. But now I can't get enough of that sort of thing.
And what would you say changed since the time when you didn't particularly find it inciting to know?
Well, I started, learning other languages, maybe basically, and just finding out how language works, how people pronounce language, the history, the origin of language. It's all fascinating and it's never-ending learning, right?
And do you have any favorite fun facts for anybody not familiar, perhaps, with the area of linguistics? Anything that you can sprinkle in as a fun fact?
You caught me off guard. A fun fact for linguistics. Well, I think that the study of linguistics will help greatly with the study of language because then people speak and they communicate now and they have no idea where that ability came from, the history of the words they use, the importance of finding the right word. So I think linguistics helps to cover that, especially when it comes to the origin of language.
Certainly, certainly. And I found that very helpful for myself, but also a lot of the students that I've been working with, once they discover that the root of the word is, let's say, French, for instance, and they see, oh, I know that word, or I know maybe a similar word in Spanish or something like that, and then it's that much easier for them to remember that word, which is always something that people struggle with, the actual remembering of the vocabulary that they learn. But like you said, once you discover where it came from and how it functions and why it sounds the way that it sounds, then it's really that much easier to remember all of those words. So a very, very wonderful point. Thank you for sharing that. And in terms of the languages that you mentioned here, you mentioned Spanish and you mentioned French, but with your work with translating, you also work with more rare languages. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Okay, so my company provides translations of rare languages or languages you would not think of, not Romance languages, in all the various continents of the world. I personally work with Spanish, French, English, and Jamaican patois. It's interesting because when I was being educated in Jamaica, patois was considered, like street talk. So your parents would say, speak properly. And then here in the United States, because there are so many Jamaicans, they need to communicate. So, and then because in Jamaica also there's been an effort to make it into an official language, it became a thing. So I've also worked with other dialects, Creoles, accents, variants, such as Antiguan. I was born and lived in Antigua for many, many years. Saint Vincent is another island in the Caribbean. I've gotten work and they said, oh, this is Jamaican patois and, audio. And upon listening, I realized it was not. It was from St. Vincent. I think one of the first requests I had was for Bajan, Bajan. And I had no clue what it was because we were providing Somali at the time for this client. So I'm looking up Baja. And I'm, thinking, is it Indonesian? What? And then I'm like, there's no way this could be Bajan. And then I said, send me the clip. And it was from Barbados. And then there's Crujon, Saint Thomian. I've had work, from the Virgin Islands that the regular US English speaker may not clearly understand. Other than that, I collaborate with other linguists who provide the other real languages. And in translation and interpreting, it is customary to translate into one's own native language. However, when a language is very rare and linguists working in these languages are difficult to find, they may likely be required to translate from their language into English, since English is one of the most common languages used in the world. Therefore, my suggestion would be for speakers of real languages to learn English very well enough to translate from and into the language. At any rate, the final proofread and QA will take care of perfecting the output.
No, certainly. And I really like your point here of perfecting that language, be it English in the sense of translating, or be it potentially any other language that you're learning with your case, that of being Spanish or French or any others potentially that you've decided to take in upon yourself. But how would you recommend for people to do that? Like you said, perfecting that language, where would you recommend to start, or potentially what would you say are the most important parts of a language to master, to learn, to develop, to again, quote unquote, perfect that language skill.
Well, I'll be honest with you, in my day-to-day activity, like I hear speeches, for example, in English, I hear speeches, I talk to colleagues, I talk to friends who have pretty good jobs, good positions, and it is clear that somewhere along the line they did not get a proper basic grounding in English, which is supposed to be their native language. So people may be taken aback when I suggest to start from the beginning. Really go through and make sure you have that perfect foundation. So read or do whatever it takes to learn at the basic level, make sure the foundation is right. Because if the foundation is not right, then there's difficulty. And I give you a quick example. You know, we pluralize in English, adding S invariably. So sometimes, for instance, the verb to do, there's some people who are a little mixed up. They think he or she do, because does with the S would sound like plural. And so they would say they does. And they're not bad people, but it's just that adding S is plural already. So therefore, you know, the plural should be used. And because English is a very difficult language, so I suggest a lot of reading, you know, whatever is affordable, study, read, listen, select good audiovisual materials. And, you know, it takes focus. It takes a lot of focus, but it can be done.
Do you have any favorite resources or any perhaps favorite sources of, like you said, high quality audio, high quality materials, anything that you can recommend?
Well, I would suggest checking the local libraries and see what's available. Berlitz also has a very good course, and they're very intensive. Obviously, like when I went to school, you know, some of those materials may be outdated now, but the library should still have good audio, because when I used to teach English at a second as a second language, I did find quite a bit of audio visual material at the library. So check the local library.
And Deborah, I'd also like to talk to you about your translating, because I saw that you work with some legal documents and some more of the complex parts of the language. And I was really wondering how you deal with the specialized vocabulary for those particular documents, because I know a lot of people struggle with remembering that kind of vocabulary, especially if they don't use it all day, every day. It's easy to remember, hi, how are you, my name is, of course. But when it comes to the more specialized, the more technical language, I've noticed that a lot of people tend to struggle with that. So do you perhaps have any suggestions, any recommendations, any tips for learning that in the first place? Of course, remembering it, but also maintaining that accuracy in what you're saying.
Okay, the first thing I would suggest, the technical area that you're interested in, first, don't spread yourself too thin. Select one or two specialized areas. Don't try to study like six or eight different specialty areas, because it's not going to work. I was fascinated with the law because, you know, I grew up with a family with lawyers. My grandfather was a judge. My father was a lawyer. And so I always had that background. I was always at my dad's office, poking my nose into stuff. And then when I finished my bachelor's, I started translating personal documents. And I learned more and more about what I was doing. But the idea is to work in the specialized area of interest. I worked for about 10 years as a legal secretary. And I had the opportunity to help to proofread, even just typing some of that stuff. The language gets into your head. You know, so work or volunteer in the specialized area of interest. That's very important, even in your own language. And then if this is not possible, subscribe to journals or join groups where this kind of subject is discussed. Back in the day, we armed ourselves with specialized dictionaries, which were very expensive.
Yes.
I've paid like $300 for a dictionary,
Wow.
and they were very heavy to carry to classes, whatever, wherever you're going, and you had assignments. However, these days there are specialized online dictionaries, as well as groups, association, and other online resources that can help language students collaborate with other linguists who practice in these fields. So leveraging relevant training is very beneficial.
And that's a really wonderful point, Deborah, that it's not just about doing it in your target language, but in your own language as well, to become more familiar with the concepts in general, not just the words used, but rather why they're used, how they're used, what situations they're used in. So I really like that point. I think that's very, very important, definitely.
Yes, a lot of times I come across terms that I would only have been able to, if I'm translating, say, from Spanish or French into English, I come across a term in Spanish or in French, and it may not be something I've seen before, and it may be tricky finding that term. And if I did not know something close in English, I would not be able to figure out the term. So don't underestimate training in your own language, because you should be translating into your own language. So the more you know in your own language will enhance your ability to translate into your language.
Perfect. Very good piece of advice. And how important would you say from that theme of those complex topics, complex vocabulary coming into them is something that I also believe a lot of people struggle with is coherence within their communication. And I know that especially with the native speaker, non-native speaker relations, that tends to be an issue where the native speakers might like to use more complex vocabulary, more quote unquote advanced vocabulary, and the non-native speakers tend to get a little bit lost and they have no idea what's going on. So, in terms of the coherence in communication on both sides of the spectrum, be it from the native speaker side or also the non-native speaker side, do you have any, again, tips, any recommendations potentially to people that want to improve their clarity, for people that want to ensure that they are sending the right message, essentially?
I'll tell you a little story. Once there was an Arabic-speaking woman that I knew, and she needed to have surgery. Now, my knowledge of Arabic was very basic, and I was able to negotiate her having surgery for a hiatal hernia. How I did it to this day, I'm serious. I was able to help her communicate with the doctor and set up this surgery, which she had successfully, and she's doing fine. So I say all of that to say communication is something that is so vital, effective communication. And it starts with the will to communicate, because many times I'm speaking, you're not hearing. You're speaking, I'm not hearing. I'm saying something, you're hearing something different. You're saying something, I'm hearing something different. And so we lack the almost the word empathy, which is becoming a brand name that I'm going to be latching on to. And it's so vital in today's world, And coherence is vital for effective communication. There is a component of learning a language to include learning the accent and the intonation used. And this is why native speakers of the respective language make the best teachers. If you're going to have a teacher that's teaching you a language, it should really be a native speaker. I mean, there are really brilliant teachers who can teach who are not native speakers, and I've run into those. But these were people who were really passionate about language, and that's the only reason it worked. If it's not passionate, and if it's just a job, or if it's for ego, it's not going to work. But when you have a native speaker, you pick up the intonation, you pick up everything. So that said, there are accents that are very pronounced. So if desired, a person can take an accent reduction class. But this is only to enhance communication. I hasten to say this should not be taken for a person to measure up, because there's a feeling that people don't measure up if they have certain accents. Nothing could be further from the truth. And I was very thrilled when I was taking the course in court interpreting at NYU. It was one of the first things that was stated to me, that when interpreting, accent only matters if the audience has difficulty understanding what is being said. So an interpreter can have a quote-unquote thick accent, but as long as understanding is taking place, it's fine. There's no better accent or inferior accent. So if you're in a country and you still have your accent, it's fine so long as you're speaking properly and people are understanding you. So to enhance understanding, it is important to speak a language using the syntax that a typical user would use. For example, there's some people, like if you call customer service, where customer service is outsourced, you can get someone, you don't mind the accent, but they're using too many words for padding, and they're finding a roundabout way of saying something, and their sentence structure is not that which would be typically used by a native speaker. So those things have to be corrected, because if you have too many words for padding, and then you have a sentence structure that's not typically used, along with a different accent, then you will have difficulty for the intending audience to really understand.
Which is a really brilliant message, Deborah, and I very much would love to reiterate that for anybody listening, that it's not about having, like you said, a better accent or a worse accent or anything like that. It's all about effective communication and that coherence within communication, and both things happen. I've had a lot of people that I've worked with that did struggle with the coherence side of things, with the, like you said, the thick accents, and so that of course had to be mitigated because the communication wasn't really there. But if you simply have an accent, be it, I don't know, French, Spanish, Italian, or whatever else it might be, but everybody can understand you, then that should not be a worry or a concern, unless of course you choose to speak differently. You perhaps like the sound more, and it's just a personal preference. And of course I'm not here to say that you're not supposed to do something that you want to do, but if it's simply for that, oh, but I have an accent and they don't, they have an accent too. It's a different accent. It's a native accent, but it's still an accent nonetheless. And so I feel like that's a, like you said, Deborah, a common misconception that it's worse or better or something like that. Whereas in reality, it is just a difference. And I would love to come back to something that you said at the beginning with the effective communication and the empathy side of things. I see that, like you said, I see that thrown around very often, and I feel like we are getting a little bit numb to the idea of empathy, unfortunately, because of how often it's getting used. But it is a really wonderful point and something that I also love to spread around myself, that it's not just what I want to hear and what I want to say and what I think is important, but if I'm coming into a conversation, a discussion, a debate, then I should be there with an open mind and open heart to what you want to share with me, to what other people are willing to share, and not just what I have in my head and what I want to talk about, because then I could just be talking to myself instead of to you. So finding a proportion of where, like you said, that effective communication takes place, and that involves a lot of listening, a lot of understanding, a lot of that coherence within communication. So I very much like that point. And to dig a little bit deeper into that, would you say that there is anything else that is a fundamental piece of effective communication? So we had coherence, that empathy side of things. Would you say for your personal experience, even like you said, working with clients, the people that you've talked to in the past, have you noticed any other, again, fundamental pillars potentially of that effective communication? Anything that you can share?
Well, you did touch upon it. Listening is the ultimate communication form, I would say. Because if you don't listen, if you don't tune out your own ideas, you literally almost have to tune them out. A good listener actually will forget what they were going to say because they're so caught up in hearing what the other person is saying. And when I have moments like that, I feel very proud of myself because I have a tendency to have strong ideas that have to be gotten across. And so I would say listening. In our interpreting class, we had to read this book, When Listening Comes Alive. And so really active listening is probably the first pillar of communication. That's how we learn. You know, even with songs, even on a choir, we would be trying to sing with the teacher. And she would say, no, listen first and then sing the line. And so listening is very important for learning, for communication, for negotiation, for everything. And even sometimes when translating, you actually have to listen to what you're reading to see if it makes sense. You know, so listening, I would say, is really, it can't be stressed too much how much listening is important. You know, you when you listen, you actually will hear what has not been said. And sometimes what has not been said is, if not more important, equally as important as what is being said.
That's really profound. I like that. I like that it's not just about repeating the same dogma over and over again, but hopefully coming up with some new ideas. And now you touched on something that I also wanted to discuss a little bit with negotiations. And I always find this incredibly interesting because even in our native language, it's still a skill. It's something that has to be learned or at least practiced. In my experience, it's not really something that we are naturally good at, unfortunately, but still something that we need to work on and practice. And again, into the realm of doing it in a non-native language, in maybe a language where you don't know all the words, don't know all the structures, the idioms, the phrasal verbs, all of those types of things. When it comes to negotiations, I feel like it goes from difficult to maybe a little bit too difficult for some people in my experience. And for you, of course, like you said, doing the translating and a lot of that sort of thing in languages beyond your native language, do you have any tips or any recommendations for people that want to become better negotiators, again, be it their native or non-native language?
Well, one of the things with negotiation, aside from listening, is something that was taught to me early in the history of my company. I actually took some coaching and coaching services, and I was told that people who are listening to your pitch are not thinking at all about what you're saying. They're thinking about what's in it for me. That's all they're thinking about. So you're talking and you're laying it out, and you think that, you know, you've made a great case, and they're just thinking, what's in it for me? So aside from listening, it's important to really find out what's important to the person you're negotiating with. And it's so asking questions it's a very good thing, and that you can ask, even if your language is not that great, if you keep asking questions, and, you know, even at the most basic level, and getting a feel of what the other person is saying, you will have some sense of what's important to them, right? Instead of the big negotiation, you can negotiate smaller things. And this reminds me of when I attend, say, networking events. There's some people that don't like them. I don't mind them, because I'm going to find out about these people. I'm not going to present myself. I only matter in as much as I found out what matters to these people. And so when you go, instead of trying to pitch and say who I am and, you know, what we do and what you want, they may not really need your services. But if you say, hi, you know, what are you into? You know, tell me more about yourself. The more you allow the person to express, you know, themselves, is the more they find you interesting. And some people even go to events and hand out, you know, tons of business cards and wonder why nobody calls them. But it's important to get the business cards and then reach out to people and form real relationships with them. Not necessarily try to sell them something, but friendships. So I'm just saying, simplify as much as possible. And that will make it easier. You know, whatever level you're on, simplify. A couple things, because with respect to, say, editing, proofreading, QA, after writing and translation is done, the editing, proofreading, and QA are later stages. Now, this is important because this is usually done by others, you know, aside from the translator. So what am I saying? I'm saying that it takes a team. It takes a team. It takes collaboration. Usually, as I mentioned before, translations are done by native speakers of the target languages, unless such a person is not available. And it requires intensive training and pinpoint focus to be able to negotiate, write, translate, or proofread in any language. But if you collaborate and you have others, and for example, my team always has people who are better than me. My team cannot go unless these people are better than me. And I'm not threatened in the least if there are people who are more qualified than me and more important than me. And so just recognizing that you're not alone unto yourself is very important. So I hope I answered your question.
You certainly did. You certainly did. And I really appreciate what you said here at the end, that just because these people are better than you at what they do, that doesn't necessarily mean that you can't do what you do anymore, or that you're not going to have your job, or that they're going to replace you, or any of these lurking thoughts that we tend to have. But like you said, it's all about that collaboration that we can create mutually all together, because I like this quote, and I'm sure you would have heard it before. If you want to go quickly, go alone, but if you want to go far, go together. And this is exactly to your point that, like you said, you've been doing this for over 16, 17 years, which is quite far, in my personal opinion, at least. And so I can very much appreciate what you're talking about, that it's not just me and I'm the best and I'm the greatest at everything, but no, look, I'm not. And you can admit that openly, that you're not the best at everything. You're the best at what you do, or the particular part of what you do. But there is still a lot of other people that come into the picture to make everything the best that it can possibly be. And so I think that's a really beautiful message to anybody listening. And I would also love to spin that into confidence and confident communication, because what you just said, I would say, takes a lot of guts and takes a lot of that internal confidence in what you do, that, hey, I'm not the best, and you're happy to share that nonetheless. So would you say that has always been a part of you, that internal confidence potentially, or maybe from your perspective, it's something a little bit different, but that self-confidence and yes, I can do this. I have these particular sets of skills. This is what I'm good at. What could you say to people that don't necessarily have that self-confidence in themselves?
Look, I've had challenges myself. Do I measure up? Am I good enough? Am I relevant? That's one that I fight with all the time, especially with this AI and all this stuff. Going back to childhood, it takes being inquisitive, it takes a sense of wonder, it takes focus, it takes doing what you're good at. It almost like stay in your lane. Don't try to be someone else, but stay in your lane. I remember attending an event at NYU earlier again in the business, and I was speaking to some real stalwarts at NYU, and it was a big group. And I said, listen, how do I handle my limitations? And one very wise interpreter business owner said, what are your strengths? Major on your strengths and slowly, build up on the areas that need to be built up. But your differentiator is your strength. And so I would say that to anyone, if you really know that there are areas that need to be addressed, certainly address them, but the areas that are strengths, push those to the hilt, I would say.
Very wonderful piece of advice. And I've heard something similar before, like you said, that we always try to focus on our weaknesses because they're a weak side, so we have to improve them. We have to be better with our weaknesses. But if you spend all of that time and effort that you spend focusing on your weaknesses, on your strengths, and outsource your weaknesses, imagine how much greater, how much, quote unquote, smarter you could be if you spent all of that time, effort, sweat, and so on into the things that you're good at, that you're, like you said, naturally good at, potentially that inquisition, that questioning of the world. If you hone those skills, you could be worlds better than people that try to balance everything in their lives. And to your point, we don't have to be perfect at everything, and you're never going to be perfect at everything. So just focus on the things that you're good at, if you can outsource the things that you're not. But I do appreciate the flip side of that, that that is not always possible, especially, for instance, if you are a language learner and you need to be learning that language, perhaps for your maybe immigration or to an exam or for work, those types of environments where you're not doing it simply for the pleasure, but rather out of necessity. And I do appreciate that you can't always outsource that, and you can't always skip that part of your life that you just don't want to deal with. And so for that, like you said before, accepting those things, potentially trying to maybe look at them from a bit of a different light, that it's not, oh, something that I have to do, but I have to do it, but it's okay. I might as well do my best, and I might as well try my best. And get the help of others, like you said before, that you yourself got some coaching, get somebody that can help you out, get somebody that can teach you the ropes and what it is that you're not necessarily good at. And would you say that there are any other hacks, any other tips that you can recommend to get over those things that you don't necessarily want to do, but you have to do anyway?
Well, in terms of outsourcing could mean that I can outsource to someone and that's the end of it. They do it and then, you know, I compensate them. But there's also partnering. Partnering means someone needs me and I need them and we partner. It may not be a big legal structure, but it may be us getting together so that together we're stronger than if we were alone, you know. And so it takes trust and it takes flexibility and a willing to share, you know, all of these things. It takes integrity, you know, because if someone is depending on you, then you can't let them down. And, you know, you can accomplish a lot through partnering. I also remember working with others through a barter system where they use my skills and they provided me with services. So all these are things, and you know, it comes from the conversation. It comes from really dealing with people as humans and not just business, you know, but just human relationships, forging human relationships, and just being willing to think outside the box, perhaps, and feel out people and see what they're interested in as well. Yeah.
I very much appreciate that point of, like you said, it's not always a clear cut, you do this, I pay you, but maybe you can do something for me, maybe I can do something for you. And like you said, it all comes down to what we were talking about before with that clear, effective communication. If you know what I want and I know what you want, then we can try to negotiate again to come back to a previous point. But if I don't know what you're looking for, if I didn't listen to when you were telling me what you want, then that becomes a little bit more of a challenge. And I do, Deborah, I did want to talk to you about your more analytical skills when it comes to language. And I saw that you work a lot with grammar, with vocabulary, with spelling, with punctuation, with what you were talking about at the very beginning as well, that you've always found those enticing and always found those interesting. Would you say that any of these is quote unquote key or the most important part that you should focus on? And I get that question a lot. Oh, should I focus on my grammar and my vocabulary? And I mean, they all work together, of course, but from your experience, from what you do, from again, the people that you've been working with, would you say that you've noticed any particular key or foundational part that has been the most helpful for you in your language journey?
I'm not sure about a key aspect. Mm-hmm. I would have to give it some more thought. However, I do notice in English that usage is constantly changing. I'm speaking for English. You know, what could be considered bad grammar or wrong punctuation or poor spelling is constantly used by people of all walks of life. Now, to a certain extent, there is a certain amount of grace because, say, here in the United States, there are so many speakers of different native languages. And so, you know, people are not as judgmental if, you know, someone has a different accent. Or if someone, because I suppose we're texting all the time, we're on social media, people are spelling things differently, abbreviating, you know, things get cut, things go by the wayside. But sadly, it appears also that as long as you're making money, or if your business is doing well, or if you have a high position in society, maybe you're in government, people also don't seem to care much about grammar, punctuation, or spelling anymore, which is a shame. Even in translation, there's a tendency to be concerned about speed and volume, and sometimes less concerned about perfecting the translation and making sure it's top class. So, for those of us who care, the errors are very glaring, and we lament the loss of integrity in language. So, I'm always fighting about that, and there are people who, if I post on it, there are people who jump up immediately and they'll comment and they'll, say, what is the world coming to? And it's like the end of the world. I think that all aspects, grammar, spelling, and punctuation are vital. And actually, each work with the other, because if you have, say, a sentence and the spelling is inaccurate, technically the grammar is wrong, or if the punctuation is not accurate, the grammar is wrong. I suppose it all falls under grammar. We discussed pronunciation already, and recognize that pronunciation can really vary. As we used to say, pronunciation varies, and some say potato and some say potato, jokingly. So, overall, again, vocabulary, you mentioned vocabulary. Vocabulary is important, and that comes from reading. The other day, I used in a vision statement, the word exude. And the people who read it said, oh, do you mean exclude? What's that? Take it out. And, it's leading people the wrong way. And I'm like, exude is such a beautiful word. And it comes from not reading. People speak, they say things, and they say things, they pronounce things, and write things how they say them. And so, reading, if you ask me what's the key, it's reading. Reading all sorts of materials, just reading. I'm an avid reader, not necessarily books. I even put on subtitles when I'm watching movies because I just want to see what's written. And then, of course, I critique the subtitles and say whether they're right or wrong. I'm thrilled to watch, say, a movie in Arabic, but watch the subtitles in French. I do things like that because I really enjoy reading. So I would say the key is reading, reading good material, trustworthy material of any topic you want, but reading is important.
And it's a wonderful point that you made here that it doesn't necessarily have to be books that you're reading. It might be subtitles, it might be blogs or articles, like you said, with the caveat of them being correct and proper, of course. But beyond that, I mean, what it is that you read, as long as it's some new input, new material, like you said, new vocabulary, new structures, potentially even the translations. I always like to laugh at those too, the translations of movie titles and the actual subtitles within movies are sometimes a pain, and they often make me cringe. But like you said, it's a fun exercise, so I can very much appreciate that. And Deborah, for anybody listening and for anybody that is interested in learning more about what you do, perhaps maybe working with you, where can people find you?
Okay, so my website is thelanguageshop.org. The language shop spelled SHOP dot org. And so, you can either just send a comment there. There's a sign up to join us, or if you want us to evaluate a project, whatever it is, feel free to reach out. I'm also on LinkedIn. So it's linkedin.com/in/thelanguageshop. Same for Twitter, twitter.com/thelanguageshop. Facebook.com, either my name, Deborah Avril Lockhart, or facebook.com/thelanguageshop. So yeah, you should be able to find us easily. And we're located in Queens, New York.
Fantastic. Perfect. And Deborah, do you have any last words, anything that we didn't potentially touch on today, but still something that you would like to share?
I thought of something and forgot it. It's so funny.
Very apropos.
You know, I would just encourage the up-and-coming translators, people interested in language, to, you know, to forge ahead and remember that you can, language will always be necessary. I mean, I've had so many opportunities. I've had opportunities, you know, we didn't mention this, but even now languages, you know, you're asked to interpret or to translate stuff, and it's written by people who are mixing up languages like the Spanglish, and it's a whole learning process. So I promise you, if you study language, you'll never be bored, and there will always be an opportunity for you to use your language.
Beautiful final message, I would say. And thank you very much, Deborah, for your time. Thank you for sharing all of your stories and your wisdom. And I'm sure that anybody that listened to you today has learned a lot from you.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Hey, I'm glad to see you here. Let me know what you most enjoyed about this conversation, and if you have any questions, leave them in the comments below. I'll see you in the next one. Do zobaczenia.